This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the Public Order and Security Act, also known as POSA, has been often described as a draconian law that belongs to the past.
That's Kudzai Zenawashi reporting from Harare. Details coming up. Also, Cameroon's Constitutional Court has cleared the way for 85-year-old President Paul Biya to win another term in office. And hundreds of Liberians protested yesterday in Monrovia, calling for justice for girls allegedly raped. But these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story: each year, Demo Africa brings together thousands of African tech entrepreneurs, developers, and investors, along with students and their international peers. The idea is to spread the innovation that already is going all over Africa and foster new ideas to strengthen the continent's fast-growing economies. VOA's Jackson Funganye is at this year's Demo Africa, being held this week in Casablanca, Morocco. He spoke to our colleague Kate Pound-Dawson earlier today about this intensive tech incubation program.
These are startups that are run by young African entrepreneurs, and they are selected by Demo Africa over the course of the year. Many of these startups seek to solve issues or challenges that they face on the continent. Many of them are local problems, but when they come here, they're seeking for investments, and they hope that they can take some of these solutions to the global stage. And so this is a great platform for them to showcase their business, their solutions that they're bringing to the market, and hopefully get some investments to expand their businesses.
What are some of the most interesting ideas you're seeing?
One of the most interesting ones that I've seen so far, and there are very many. I can't talk about all of them, but the one that really caught my mind is one that was started by this young lady from Tunisia, and the company, or the startup company's name is Hawker. The young lady's name is Khadija. She wants to build a compact electric car that is semi-autonomous, and she says that the car will help people with disabilities or reduced mobility. And Demo Africa, for the past couple of days, they spent in a boot camp where they gain skills from experts, industry experts, on how to better manage their businesses, on how to sell their businesses, expand their market, but most importantly, raise money to improve or to scale their businesses.
All right. Do you see most of these ideas and projects as being only for the Africa market, or do you see these as having potential for the global market?
Initially, they start off solving a local issue, like, say, agriculture or healthcare in their communities or education in their communities. But there is a potential for them to scale up because many of these issues are shared issues. We live in a global community. They understand that we do live in a global community, and that it's possible that the issues, the challenges that they face, say, here in Casablanca or in Kigali or in Johannesburg, South Africa, these are issues that are faced everywhere else in the world. And they hope that by coming here to Demo Africa and presenting it on this stage, what happened here on Demo Africa the last few days is that these young tech entrepreneurs basically pitch their concepts or startups in front of a jam-packed auditorium with an audience that consists of students from local universities. We saw young professionals, most importantly, we see that there's a team of potential investors. And if you know the TV show Shark Tank, for those who watch American TV, that's pretty much how it works. You present, and then the investors or the potential investors ask you questions on the viability of your business idea. Obviously, for many of these young people, they're out of that idea or conceptual stage of their businesses. Many of them are already operating their businesses and making a profit, but their main goal is to expand, and therefore they need to raise more capital.
That was our colleague Jackson Mfunganyi at Demo Africa in Casablanca, speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson. Hundreds of Liberians protested yesterday in Monrovia calling for justice for girls allegedly raped at the More Than Me Academy, which is run by an American charity. The government is reopening the investigation into the allegations. In 2015, the co-founder of the school was tried for the rapes, but a mistrial was declared. He died before he could be retried. A video documentary produced by the U.S.-based ProPublica and Time magazine has called new attention to the case. In 2014, More Than Me began helping victims of the Ebola epidemic in Liberia. At the time, it received funds from another major aid agency, Mercy Corps. The U.S. State Department tells Voice of America that it gave grants to Mercy Corps to fight the outbreak, and some of that money may have gone to More Than Me as a sub-grant. State Department says it has not given More Than Me any money for its educational work. The U.S. Agency for International Development also gave funds to Mercy Corps to fight Ebola, and that it gave a sub-grant to More Than Me. More Than Me's 2014 U.S. tax records show it received $500,000 from State Department and $94,000 from U.S. aid. Both agencies told VOA they are checking their records for any other grants to the charity. 'Thursday was a good day for democracy in Zimbabwe. The country's constitutional court repealed the oppressive Public and Order Security Act. It's been used against many activists or citizens who disagree with government policies. Reporter Kuzaza Nwashi has details.
The Public Order and Security Act, also known as POSA, has been often described as a draconian law that belongs to the past. The Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA, is one of the civic organizations in Zimbabwe that has long called for an end to the legislation. Kudahove is a legal officer for MISA.
POSA, or the Public Order and Security Act, was an act which was introduced in the early 2000s to sort of control how and when and under what circumstances people met in public spaces.
Hove adds that the police have used POSA to bar many political gatherings. A good example is the recent planned national protest by the Zimbabwe Congress for Trade Unions, which police failed to sign off on. Patience Msindo is a Harare resident and says the repeal of POSA is a step in the right direction.
I think it's a good move by the government to align existing laws with the constitution, because these laws are very archaic and they have been stopping people from demonstrating their rights peacefully.
Charles Nyoni is an activist and welcomes the end of the law.
It's a positive step in the right direction, although there is still more that needs to be done. This shows that the fight is still there and we are making progress. And thumbs up to Chief Justice Makarau for coming up with this outstanding ruling.
Nyoni says people will be out peacefully demonstrating soon. However, Ove has reservations about the jubilations, but he remains cautiously optimistic.
There is a 6-month waiting period that has been given to government and the minister responsible for implementing POSA. That would be the Minister of Home Affairs. So in that 6-month period, he has to come back to the court and justify why he believes Section 27 still needs to be in the law books.
Ove says until the new law is completely struck down, people will still need to approach the police for clearance for planned events and gatherings. He is, however, hopeful that the minister will not file any justification supporting POSA. Amnesty International Zimbabwe is among the pressure groups that have welcomed the ruling to end POSA. Together with other pro-democracy groups, they look forward to the repealing of other pieces of oppressive legislature as well. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Cameroon's Constitutional Court has cleared the way for 85-year-old President Paul Biya to win another term in office by rejecting the last of 18 challenges to the legitimacy of the October 7th election. Biya has ruled the fractured country for nearly 36 years. The results of the ballot have to be announced by Sunday. They had been held up pending resolution of the challenges. All three of the major opposition parties filed petitions to have the election nullified or rerun. Some cited allegations of violence and voter intimidation, particularly in the restive English-speaking northwest and southwest regions, along with fraud and ballot stuffing. One petition was rejected because it was filed an hour late. The last three were rejected late last night. Joshua Oshii of the main opposition Social Democratic Party claimed the election essentially did not take place in the English-speaking areas that are his party's strongholds. Only 90,000 votes were cast by the region's 1 million registered voters. With a focus on Africa's youth, World Bank staff and development specialists connected with young people in more than 30 countries to mark End Poverty Day. They discussed how to harness the potential of young people. VOA correspondent Maria Madialo reports.
From Abuja to Pretoria, Bamako to Antananarivo, young people from 30 African cities connected to development experts in Washington via video conferencing. Topics varied from improved internet access to blockchain technology to the digital economy and funding.
If we're going to be the ones who are crafting and shaping the future, is that the role that we want the African to play?
The World Bank reports the number of people living in extreme poverty has decreased. Data shows that while fewer people are living in extreme poverty globally, the rate of reducing poverty has slowed. World Bank Africa Region Vice President Hafez Ghanem joined in the conversation from Lusaka, Zambia, where he addressed the youth.
Africa's greatest wealth and its greatest asset is its youth. Its youth who are able to, who have the energy and the ability to move ahead and change.
Yet there's a lot of work to do in Africa. The continent's poverty problem has grown considerably worse in 25-plus years.
The number of poor people in Africa has grown from 278 million people in 1990 to 413 million people today. So we have actually more poor people in Africa now than more than 20 years ago. Obviously, this is not an acceptable trend.
Ending poverty can feel like a broad concept for the youth, making it overwhelming to focus on one area of development, says Selina Bachili. The 23-year-old intern and co-moderator of the event has this advice.
We need to start somewhere. We need to start with education. We need to start with changing the mentality in the continent. And we need to move from that. We can go into agriculture, energy, and all that. But we need education, and we need to focus on STEM.
In other words, science, technology, engineering, and math. And while some say technology can provide an opportunity to develop faster, Bright Simmons, co-founder of M-Pedigree, says it depends.
The challenge is that we've done well in consuming a lot of technology. What we've not done as well is in the production of technology. So leapfrogging cannot just be about the fact that we are consuming more money transfer. It has to also be that we are producing new technologies that anticipate trends in the world.
He also says creating technologies that are relevant to the realities on the ground will represent true leapfrogging. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
The South African government has acknowledged making a lot of mistakes with land reform in the past. It says That is why its controversial plan to expropriate land without compensation is now necessary. Most prime agricultural land is still owned by white farmers. The ruling African National Congress, or ANC, says political freedom is meaningless without economic freedom. But this is impossible as long as most of the land is owned by only a few people. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The leader of the ANC's task team on land reform, Deputy President David Mabuza, says his party's decision to expropriate land, including that of some white farmers, has unleashed the most heated debate yet seen in post-democratic South Africa.
Land has been always a sensitive matter, and it's at the heart of ordinary people, their daily struggles, their economic emancipation, and their social empowerment.
The land issue continues to stoke racial tensions. One of the radical groups involved is the Economic Freedom Fighters, led by Julius Malema.
Our people must continue to occupy land. This land belongs to us. It is their land. They require nobody's permission to occupy this land. And if the ANC wants to kill our people for rightfully claiming the land, let the ANC do so.
Then there's AfriForum, an organization claiming to represent all minorities in South Africa. Its second-in-command, Ernst Rutz, is constantly clashing with those who contend that white colonialists stole the land.
It is your argument that ownership of land by whites should be regarded as illegitimate because Africa is the black people's continent. Then you should be prepared to join forces with white right-wing fascists in Europe who argue that Europe is white people's continent and that there is no place for black people in Europe.
Mabuza says such high emotion around land ownership shows the ANC has little choice other than to speed up land reform.
Failure to meaningfully resolve the land question can easily lead to instability and unintended consequences.
Thus, the door is open for the ANC to seize white-owned property and to give it to black people. The party insists, however, that its mission remains to create a non-racial, egalitarian society.
This country belongs to all of you, black and white. As the leadership of the ANC and government, we are clear that the implementation of land reform measures must not result into social fractures and racial polarization.
Mabuza says his party's land restitution plan isn't built solely on taking land from whites and giving it to blacks.
It is about ensuring that land is made available to people who want to work the land and put it into productive use so that the productive capacity of our country is maximized. Farmers must continue to produce without any fear, as land reform is not about destroying production. Instead, it is about expanding new horizons.
But with the sword of expropriation hanging over them, many white farmers are afraid they won't be part of those new horizons. Mabuza has moved fast to curb their concerns.
Your country needs you to grow this sector by imparting your skills and knowledge to the next generation of commercial farmers.
Mabuza says as long as the white farmers are on the land, the ruling party will protect them.
And we'll also encourage you to meet all other sectors to allay everyone's fear that there will be land grabs, farmers will be killed. That won't happen.
What may well already be happening is an economic meltdown. Land prices have dropped more than 30% since the ANC announced its expropriation plans in December last year, leading some in the finance sector to conclude that new black farmers may find themselves on land that isn't worth much. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
European Union leaders took stock of progress on stemming the flow of migrants from Africa into Europe during their meeting this week in Brussels. They note that there has been a significant decrease in migrant arrivals from the eastern route from Libya across the Mediterranean Sea to Italy. However, there's been an increase on the western route, where migrants are traveling from Mauritania and Morocco to enter Europe through Spain. Another big concern discussed was how to stop human traffickers who are victimizing migrants. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with reporter Catherine Field, who covered the EU meeting for the latest migrant developments.
The European Union is well aware it needs to act very quickly and very assertively at the moment in the Central African Republic. They realize that Russia is becoming more assertive there, and they also realize that this is a situation that could spin out of control. And they actually said in their statement that the situation in the Central African Republic is, quote, very fragile. What they're planning to do now is they've told their officials to go back and work out a way that the EU can send more officials, more trainers, more instructors to the Central African Republic to give strategic advice to the internal security forces in that country and also to the government. Now, what they're hoping there is that they have this sort of civilian engagement. That's how they see the way forward, that you have the humanitarian aid and you also have that aid which is trainers within the military and also in the government, because they do know that unless you start getting situations such as food security dealt with, internally displaced people, actually you deal with that issue, then they're not going to get an end to this uncertainty in the Central African Republic. And they're actually even now talking about how the EU-Africa relations are now of such paramount importance because of the changing global landscape in Africa, with other players particularly such as Russia and China in that mix now.
And also, is this support part of the EU's big push in working with Africa?
It is. This is the, if you like, the buzzword that the European Union goes for now. Instead of working for Africa, they're talking about working with Africa and this new partnership of equals and talking about Africa having an ownership of its own fate. So what they're saying is that this new Africa-Europe alliance, which will bring sustainable investment and jobs, gets more funding. And so we're looking at something like 40 billion euros between 2021 and 2027 on that. And that would be projects like education and perhaps even this quite big program, which is kind of like the European Erasmus program, which would allow for students to travel to different universities, not just in Africa, but also perhaps within the European Union. So as the education side of that is dealt with as well. And also not just pure education, but also programs that would involve agriculture. So they're looking at that. They say that that's a way forward. And they also know that EU-Africa trade is huge. It's about 245 billion euros a year, that the EU has to work on that, because with Russia and China also in the mix there, they have to protect their own investment in Africa.
Why the CAR? Why is it important for them to be focusing right now on the Central African Republic?
Essentially, the European Union realizes that the turmoil in the Central African Republic since about 2013 is just showing no signs of coming to an end. There's been a few lulls in the fighting, but the idea is that they need to deal with these flare-ups. They need to stop this, because part of Europe's economic security is dependent on there being security in Africa. And when they look at the Central African Republic, they see that it doesn't seem to be getting any better. And it's felt that this actually is a situation that can't just be left to France to deal with now. It has to be dealt with as part of this bigger partnership they're putting together between the European Union and the African Union. So it really is, if you like, another one of these areas of Africa where they say you're not going to have economic stability and you're not going to have a lack of migrants from that part of Africa unless you have such issues and such problems as in the Central African Republic dealt with in an intelligent manner. And that means education, training, and trade.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with Kim Lewis from Paris. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.